And good morning from the Roscoe Morton Tower. This is From the Stand on EIA Radio. From the Stand is made possible by the Commemorative Air Force. The mission of the CAF is education, such that generations of Americans will value and support the contributions of military aviation in assuring our freedom. CAF has more than 12,000 members, operating 162 vintage aircraft, making it the largest private air force in the world. You can get more information here at the show at Hangar 57 on Boeing Plaza or at commemorativeairforce.org. Today's guests include author Christina Olds, Senator Jim Inhofe, and our next guest, Colonel Charles McGee. Glad to have you with us, sir.
Well, good morning. Good to be here.
Yes. You are one of the original Tuskegee Airmen.
Well, I've been documented.
And interestingly enough, a fact I didn't know about you until this week is that you are the U.S. Air Force record holder with 409 combat missions.
Yeah, I have to put the word fighter in front of that because there's some with a lot more and other types of thing, but for World War II, Korean, Vietnam.
Wow. Amazing, amazing. What brought you to aviation?
Well, you know, I think I was really dodging the draft. That's the way I put it. I was in ROTC in school, understood handling a rifle and had a draft card. But because I was in school, I didn't get called, but I felt if I did, probably meant ground pounding, I think we used the word back then.
Sure.
Something carrying a rifle and on the ground, and heard about the aviation opportunity, and all I can say is after my first flight, I knew I'd made the right decision. I fell in love with flying.
And I also wanted to mention you're an Eagle Scout.
Yes, indeed. That's one of the trademarks that I like to pass on. If we all continue to live by the Scout Oath and laws, we'd have a little different country for sure, maybe with fewer problems anyway.
I would think so. So with the Tuskegee Airmen, explain a little bit about how that program came to reality.
Yeah, well, it goes back a little bit of history. In 1925, the Army War College was studying how this one-tenth at that time of the population would be used if America got involved in another war. They called them facts, but to them the facts were that the black didn't have the brain power to do anything technical. We didn't have the moral fiber to be a good soldier and follow leadership and that type of thing. But they said, oh, physically qualified, dig ditches, cook food, drive trucks, but do anything technical, no. That was forwarded to Washington to be a part of war mobilization plans, and Washington bought it. So there was a denial in the 30s and on up to the time we decided to help our allies in Europe on the black getting into aviation.
And that led to what's called the Tuskegee experiment, correct?
Exactly. The Army said, oh, we've studied the issue. We know it won't be successful. But they, with the pressure and the need, they finally said, well, we'll experiment. They authorized the 99th Pursuit Squadron. And I always add, in the fine print, said all the necessary support because they insisted on segregation. So besides those 32 pilots for that squadron, you have a couple hundred technicians, and you needed medical and communications, also another couple hundred people. But when the 99th finally got combat ready, even though they didn't think it was going to be successful, they didn't know what to do. But they finally sent them to North Africa, attached to the 33rd Fighter Group.
When did you start your training?
I started my training in October. I was called from school to entered directly into the Cadet Corps, going down to Tuskegee in October 1942, graduating in class 43F, June of 43.
Excellent. And you went on to fly as the P-51 Mustang just took off in the background. You flew the Mustang, the Air Cobra, the P-39, and also the P-47.
Yes.
In service.
Yeah. What started, the 99th is the only squadron of the Tuskegee experience that flew it in combat.
Right.
Rest of us, the 332nd Fighter Group, three squadrons were combat ready in the P-40, but they said, oh, you're going to do some patrol work. We switched the P-39 Bel Air Cobra, went to Italy, did patrolling Naples Harbor, waterways up to Anzio Beachhead. But in April of 44, when they realized the bombers needed escort for protection, four groups were taken from 12th Tactical Air Force and moved to 15th Air Force. 332nd was one of them. P-39 wasn't the aircraft for that task, and we picked up P-47 Thunderbolts to start the escort work. Only had it about 3 months, and of course, P-51 Mustang. And we have to qualify that with the Rolls-Royce Merlin engine.
Right, right. And I take it from the smile on your face that the P-51 was probably your favorite of those three.
Absolutely. P-39 was a good photo op aircraft, you know, side door and all that kind of thing. P-47, wonderful airplane, big roomy cockpit, extra pair of guns. But that big radial nose and so on just limited its altitude and range capability. So when the 51 hit the scene, that was the aircraft from the ground to 35,000 feet that allowed us to do the job that was accomplished.
And do you remember your first combat mission, when that was?
Well, yes. I've gotten a target now all of a sudden. Okay. Primarily in the missions and one of the early ones, Regensburg plant chemical plants in Germany, and then the Pulaski oil fields in Romania, and a number of targets where the Germans were encamped across Yugoslavia.
And those were for escort missions?
Yes, some escort. Then we also, when the weather kept the bombers down or the need, we had some fighter sweeps. I think throughout the war, we ended up destroying more German aircraft on the ground than we did in the air. But primarily, that's the mission that the bombers accomplished, destroying the oil fields, kept them out of the air, and so we had missions to catch them on the ground. We did.
Good. With 137 combat missions in World War II, you returned to the States to become an instructor pilot, correct?
Yes, although I'm an old fighter pilot, they had started a twin-engine program at Tuskegee, so they had continued the single-engine training and had the twin-engine training for the Mitchell B-25, and I became a twin-engine instructor, so it expanded my flying experience. I was happy, but later back into fighters, and but I enjoyed flying, and if there was a test hop, whether it was a C-47 that we had to go pick up supplies or take folks to school, I was ready and made myself available for that because I just loved it.
Good. So the three aircraft that were actually flown by Tuskegee Airmen in combat missions or deployed missions would be the 39, the 47, and the P-51.
That's a 332nd fighter group. Now, the 99th flew P-40s in combat attached to white groups, North Africa, Sicily, then into Italy. When they were moving into Italy at the same time that the 332nd fighter group arrived with the P-39.
Okay.
Now, when we got the P-51 July of 44, the ground war against the Germans in Italy pretty much diminished, and so they then assigned the 99th to the 332nd fighter group. So we had four squadrons from July 44 to just before the war's end.
Good.
So and each squadron put up 16 aircraft, so we had a lot of planes in there.
Good. The B-25s, you were training in the B-25s, but never deployed in the 25s.
Yeah, they were preparing to go to the Pacific, but they fought, some folks have heard of the program at the time called Double V. We were fighting to destroy Hitlerism in Europe, and we were fighting against racism here at home. And they participated, if you call that a battle, because they were at their training base. The commander wanted to, regardless of Army regulations, wanted to maintain segregation. And of course, the officers knew what Army regulations stated, and refusing to abide by Colonel Selway's approach, were arrested, put under guards and all of this. But of course, when they had follow-up, Colonel Selway was wrong, but the Army didn't change the policy. They still insisted on segregation, and that brought another phase of the now called Tuskegee Experience. they had an integrated composite group, I think you could call it, 477th Composite Group, keeping two of the B-25 squadrons, reactivating the 99th Pursuit Squadron, and that was at Godman Field in Kentucky near Fort Knox.
Right.
But the base is a little small for the group, and that's they opened up Lockburn Air Base south of Columbus, Ohio, now Rickenbacker, for the unit. And in 46, well, the war is over in Europe. In 46, when training ended, those of us there were shipped to Lockburn Air Base there at Columbus. But that's when the Air Force led the country, really, if you will, in a change, because they determined, you know, we need to use people based on their training experience and where needed, not the happenstance of birth. And also, we're not getting the money to keep Lockburn Air Base open, but separate from meeting other requirements, and we need to integrate. And that step was followed by, I'd say, a very courageous President Harry Truman, who issued executive orders, and one of them, 9981, mandated that all of the services need to integrate for the future. I think he also issued 9980 that indicated there should be equal access throughout the federal government. So the Air Force finally carried out that mandate and their intent by closing Lockburn Air Base the 1st of July 1949. We were kind of scattered around the world. But part of the experience that often is not known, in May of 49, when the Air Force held their first Top Gun meet, the 332nd Fighter Group was represented flying P-47Ns, and they were the top guns in the reciprocating engine phase of the meet.
Excellent, excellent. We will talk more with Colonel Charles McGee, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, in just a moment, live from the stand. This is EIA Radio.